All right, morning. Hope things are well. Let's see. So I just got some email from the secretary. So she managed to locate some of the recent passing scores. So I'll add that to the website. So most of them are around 50%, except the most recent one, which was lower. Okay, let's see. So I guess at the end of last time, we listed some these problems that I'm sharing right now, which hopefully people had a chance to look at and think about how to write up. But let's see. But why don't we start as we have in the past by just quickly reviewing the ones that we looked at last time and look at an exam, and then we can come back to these. Okay. All right. So yeah. So as I said, let's just start with the problems that we looked at last time. Okay. Yeah, so I don't know, Yeah. So I don't know if anyone had any particular comments on these. Let's see. It seems that. Yeah, I think we went through these in some detail last time. So if anyone has specific comments, now would be the time. Otherwise, I think, as I said, I'll go to a an old exam, just like before, and we can just try to run through that, and then come back to the problems that we were going to talk about writing up in detail. Okay, all right. So let me do that. Okay, yeah, so here's an old exam. Let me put the link in the box, because this is kind of a long one, and so it might be easier to read in some other way. Anyway, there it is, and I will shrink it enough that it's all on the screen. But this is a long one. Yeah, that may be too small to read. Anyway, but there it is. Let me know if you have not found some way that you can read it. And let's just spend, as usual, a couple of minutes running through how we would approach these problems. Okay, let's see if people had a chance to look at some of these. So on another minute. Okay, but just another 30 seconds, and then we can try seeing what thoughts people had about these problems. Okay, so let's see. So let's just try the top here. So what about number one? How might this be approached? Any thoughts? Yep, that would be a good thing to consider, since we're trying to deal with weak. The dual to L1 is important. Okay. Right. Okay. All right. And then we're trying to show in the end that it that it's not convergent in the weak topology. So what do we need to achieve that? Right, and to get a contradiction, all that we'll need to do is find some element of the dual space so that it's not converging. Right. Right, so we just need to find some phi there in the dual space. Yeah, right. So exactly. So you can just test out specific functions and just try it. So try functions. Okay, so it's clear how you do that. You just start testing integrals against this. Okay. Okay, any other thoughts or questions about this? Actually, what would be the easiest one to try? what's the simplest element of the dual space to this L1? Yeah, constant functions. So that would be that phi applied to some function f would just be the integral of the constant function 1 times your function f. Right, and since omega has a finite measure, that's, well, it doesn't really matter. That's an element. And it's a particularly easy one to work with, to just try, okay, to get yourself started. Okay, any other comments or thoughts about problem 1? Okay, what about 2? So is this one that one could just start trying things with? Yeah, exactly. That would be a good place to start. Just take these basis functions and apply your operator. Right, because if we're in the linear span, the only things we allow are finite linear combinations of those. So it's enough to see what they do to one of them. Okay. Right, and then I guess how are you going to deal with the fact that that the space we're interested in has this extra restrictions. Exactly. So an arbitrary element here is going to be the sum of A alpha cosine of alpha x plus B alpha sine of alpha x. And this will be finite. But if we also want it to be in X, then there's just an extra linear condition of X. Okay. All right. So does that look like it'll be fairly easy, or something might be difficult there? No opinions on that one. All right, so what about number 3? So let's see. So what does it say? It says to show something here. And also we're supposed to show something else here, so you have to kind of make sure you do everything. Yeah, it's just straight definitions. So just apply definitions, it's a few integrals, and you're done. I'm sorry, the limits, and you're done. Okay. Right. Number four. Yeah, again, it's going to be largely definitions. Okay, and what's the key definition there? There's this D, right? So whenever we're working in D prime, how does one actually work? Yeah, you always work with test functions. Since we're working with distributions, work with test functions. Right. Which makes things just a layer more complicated, but otherwise not really that much more difficult. Okay. Any other thoughts about this one? They're basically showing that the concept of a Fourier series is embedded in the concept of a Fourier transform. Essentially, what they're saying, as a by restricting to periodic functions and delta functions. Okay. All right. Any other comments on this one? All right. So let's see two more. So what about number? These are long problems. Someone wrote a lot, but at least to read, they don't seem to be so hard to write. Okay. What about number five? That's a good question. That's a good question. They do state a form. It's almost immediate, it's true. There still is a subtlety, which means that maybe you could use it because here we're working with periodic functions rather than with functions on a compact set, but they're very similar. Yeah, that's right. You could show, you could do that. Yeah. I tend to agree that the most, possibly the trickiest thing about this is figuring out how much to do. Yeah. I think it's, they tell you that it's basically Stone-Weierstrass, and again, the only interesting thing really is moving from periodic functions to the torus itself. Which isn't that hard. Okay, yeah, you could do that. Yeah, I'm not quite sure what the best is, but I do think that maybe a very reasonable answer is what Greg is saying, that just check that trig polynomials fit the more general, the Stone-Weierstrass, the thing I would call Stone-Weierstrass, so the more general one, Stone-Weierstrass. Right, so it needs to be an algebra, separates points, and has constants. And then argue that once you have it on the torus, then you can translate that to the periodic ones. But again, it should be pretty easy. Okay, any other thoughts or comments about this one? Okay, and then what about this last one here? It's a lot to read. Yeah, but a lot of it, as you say here, is basically this hint telling you what they want you to do. I believe you're right that would do it. Okay. All right. So any other thoughts or comments about this exam? Overall, it seems like one with a lot of reading to do, but it's relatively straightforward. Okay, so then why don't we go to the four problems that I mentioned last time and see what thoughts people have had about how one would write one of those up in some detail. So I think I have them linked to the web page. Let me just check here. There we go. Yeah, I just added another link a few minutes ago, but this one should be here. Okay, so these are the four problems that I suggested yesterday that people choose one of and look at. Did people do this? Actually, I guess we could try a little annotation thing again or something if you want to put a little symbol or something by the one that you looked at, and then we can look at them sort of based on how many people looked at each problem. That's a little small. Number four. 16, 4. Okay, anyone else? Okay. All right, well, so then let's start then with 2016 number four, since at least a couple people looked at that one. And, all right. And so let's see. So there's someone who tried to write that up, have it in a way that they can just share a screen. Otherwise, you could dictate and I could write it on the board. Okay. All right. We could do that. If someone else wants to go first, then yeah, then we can look at Gaben's in a few minutes. So let's see. So I guess Milo also said that you'd looked at this one. Do you have something written, or I could go to the board and then you could just tell me. Also handwritten. Okay. Well, maybe it's easiest then just to read it and I can write it down and then we'll have it. So let me do that. Oh, and someone does have it typed. Okay. Do you have it? Do you want to share the screen then? Is that faster? Okay. All right, looks good. So I can see that. Can everyone else see that? Right. Let's see. And I think I can annotate on this too. Actually, I think everyone can. Mistaken. So, okay.
Yeah, these are the 201C notes that we took this past spring.
Okay, I see, I see. Okay, so this is from 201C. That visible? I'm not sure. I'm not seeing it here. Okay. All right, okay. Interesting. Okay. I can try to annotate from here, but it doesn't seem to appear. So, all right. So, okay. Yeah. So, all right. So this looks pretty clear. So let's see if that makes sense. So, yeah, this is a good way to do it. So you've labeled, what you were doing there on the right. And, I see. Okay, and this is. Okay, I see. So this is from the notes. So this is almost exactly the statement of the problem, except for this.
Normalization.
Except for the normalization. Exactly right. Yeah. Okay. Okay, and okay, and it's actually it's very clean. So, did anyone have any comments on this? Okay, well, I guess that's that. Okay, so if no one has any comments, then maybe we should look at another one. No questions? Okay, thank you. Okay, Allison, did one of the other two people who typed something up have something to show at this point?
I could share my screen and type with my note program, but honestly, the proof is basically the same.
Basically the same. Okay, and there was nothing different about the way you presented it, really.
Not really. I think I just explained a couple more steps, but really it's the same thing.
Okay, all right. Okay, let's see. So, and did anyone else have anything different? I mean, it is a fairly standard theorem, and so one can sort of check and try to follow the proof that we just saw. Okay, so if everyone gave basically the same proof and the same level of annotation, then maybe we should look at a different one. Okay, all right, so let's go back then to the other ones. Okay, so this was the Heisenberg principle. All right, so we did that. And let's see, so then there was also someone who looked at, I forget, it was the 2014 problem, yes, the orthogonal projections. Okay, yeah, why don't you do that? Ah, I see. Come you are. Okay.
Can people see what I put on the camera?
Yes, okay, good. I can see it also. Good. And it's a little small, but. You can share. Okay, all right, very good. Yes, so now I can see it clearly. And let's see, so, right. So we suppose there's a projection. and note the properties good, so that we can see, so we know. Okay, right. So, right. Okay. So then we suppose that they commute. All right. And yes, it's nicely organized by indicating which direction of the proofs you're showing. And then, all right. And so they commute, then you get the two properties, right? Right. And those are separately indicated. Good. And then, okay, and then the other thing to show is that you have the correct subspace, and so you separated those into two parts. Good, both directions of containment. Okay, and then check both of them. So, did anyone have any comments about his presentation? It looks quite clean. Okay. Great. All right. Thank you. Yeah, very good. Okay. Yeah. So we got a nice, try that from 21C on this one, and a nice write-up on that one. Okay, and let's see. So would it be helpful to try to put together a careful write-up of one of these others as a group, or to go to some problems as we have before and work more on the new ideas? Yeah, that's one that we'd already worked out what the approach was. So maybe would it be helpful then to take the fact that we know the approach pretty thoroughly and try to turn that on into a thorough write-up, or you think we've already done enough of that and it would be better to move on to another one? I think, we did talk about that one in some detail, as I recall. Okay, and what about this spectral problem? Would it be productive to try to write that one out? Well, how about if we just try sketching what we would put in without putting in all the details, just to give an outline of not the ideas of the proof, which we already know, but the sketch of what things would go into the write-up, just so that it's clear. So let's see if that, maybe that would be enough to clarify here. So, all right, so a proof sketch. All All right, so it says to find the point spectra. So so point spectrum for R, right? So I would just put it into those two things. And then what would you do here? So the first thing I do is say what the point spectrum is. So so this is going to be the set of all lambda such that there is some x in L2 n with Rx equals lambda x. Right. Yes, that's right. Yeah, I would write it out. Yep. So yeah, that's right. So yeah, so on the side, right, we could, before the actual write-up, right, there's the picture of what's going on, right? So there's your right shift and there's your left shift, right? And as you're saying, if you want something to come back to itself, you can work out what the two restrictions are, and then you can try to write that out carefully, right? Explicitly, right? And so let's see. So you're working out R here, so okay. So at this point, then I would write down a claim, right? So claim point spectrum, which I'll give a name. So I would give it the name sigma sub point of R. So the claim is that sigma sub point of R, and what is it? Right, so you're giving the eigenvectors. So let's actually recall what the two point spectra are for the two things. So so remember that the spectrum, so what, does anyone remember what the full spectrum for R and L are? So this should be a subset of C, right? That's what that's where the spectrum lives. The unit ball, that's right. So it's a set of all lambda such that the norm of lambda is less than or equal to 1, and it's the same for both of them, right? So those are the spectra. Those are the answers. But not all of that is point, right? Some of it is of the other types. So do people remember what the answer is that we're trying to get? So we're just trying to write it up now. So it's good to, of course, first you want to know the answer and then you can write it up. So right, so that's the full spectrum, and do people remember for the right shift and the left shift what the point spectrum is? Empty for one of them, that's right. Okay, so that's what I'm trying to show, sort of claiming that the that it's the empty set. And actually, as long as we're at it, what is it for the left one? Yeah, it's the interior, right. Okay, so so first we want to claim that this is an empty set. So so the proof of claim. Okay, and then so what's the logic? So if we had some x0, x1, x2, etc., that was an eigenvector with a eigenvalue lambda, then how do we see that that gives us a contradiction? Right, so intuitively, if we shift it to the right and we get back to itself, then this x0 had to be 0. And since the x0 was 0, well, when we shift it to the right, we get it back. So the x1 has to be 0, right? And since when we shift it to the right and we get it itself, multiple of itself, then the x2 has to be 0. So we can see that they all have to be 0. But what's a clean way to write that up? Yeah, so we could induct, or we could take the equivalent notion, which is the minimal criminal type argument, where you take the smallest one, right? So that's the smallest counterexample. Proof of claim. So by contradiction, assume not. So we have something which is a contradiction, which is a counterexample. And so what's the problem going to be? Well, somewhere this x is going to be non-zero, and then it has to actually be zero there. So we're done, right? So with I minimum, over the set of all j such that xj is non-zero. Okay, hence I times lambda is equal to Rx I, which is equal to x I minus 1, which is equal to 0. Okay. Okay, so so lambda is equal to 0. Okay, and then how do we deal with with the case of lambda equals 0, which is also not an eigenvalue? All right, so we have our first non-zero element here, and hence, zero times x I plus 1 equals rx I plus 1 equals x I, which is not 0, so we get a contradiction. Okay. So that's kind of, that's sort of how I would write it up. Okay, and then of course there's a similar for L. All right, so I don't know. So any thoughts or comments about such a write-up? Is it clear what it would look like for the second half? Okay, let's see. So if there are no further thoughts about this one, then we can move to some new problems. Okay. Oh, I forgot to put the name of it. These are some sort of Banach-related problems. Okay, so maybe we can think through this one a little bit and then just say a little bit about how, not just the basic ideas, but how a write-up would go for this, just to kind of practice that. Anyway, I'll give you a couple minutes to look at this one. Dominant convergence is a good idea. Are you saying that you have a counterexample? Okay, well, that's always something to keep in mind, is that one might come up with a counterexample, but that's something to do if the problem seems to be incorrect. Yeah. We do know that the interval converges, right? That's an extra fact that we're given. That's true, actually, and that's a good point. So what would be a counterexample if we were missing this star condition? It's good to keep such things in mind when working on a problem like this. Right. Yeah, sorry. Let me edit it. Inverse. Right. Right, so here, of course, the integral. Yep. Okay, anyone else have any thoughts about this? Okay, yeah, so if we wanted to apply Egorov, okay, so what was the objection a moment ago to the use of Egorov? Finite measure, right? So somehow we have to deal with the finite measure issue. But I still think it's a good idea. Okay, actually, I'm not quite sure what the generalized one says. But does anyone have any ideas for how we might actually deal with this finite measure issue? So remember what Egorov says that, okay. So Egorov says, this is the theorem, of course, that we have FK, so E finite measure set, and FK converges to F pointwise almost everywhere, then for all epsilon, there exists E epsilon, subset of E with a measure of E epsilon complement less than epsilon, and FK restricted to E epsilon converging to F uniformly. All right, so that's the Egoroff statement. And so we need to somehow deal with this issue of finite measure. Right. Okay, so what if we just cut it off at a set of finite measure? We just consider a large ball intersected with our omega. That's exactly right. Yeah, we can get most of the mass inside of something of finite size. Yeah, so that's exactly a good point. So so you can choose let's see, how did you put it? So I set you called it E prime. With the measure outside of that less than epsilon. And of course, fundamentally, the measure of E prime is finite. Right, yeah, as you said. So, yeah, so then we would be able to get a set on which we can utilize this Egoroff type theorem. So, do those seem like they're going to come together and get an argument? That's another approach, or we could, so here's one approach suggested, or instead of this single E prime here, you could break it up into a whole lot of pieces and argue on each one separately. You could do either one, right? Yeah, because these measure spaces do have the property that they're countable unions of finite measure sets. Okay, let's see. Are people optimistic that this is enough data? Maybe you want to spend a couple minutes trying to turn it into a complete argument. Okay, yeah. So yeah, why don't you spend another minute or two at it, and I'll bring up the board, and we can try to turn this into a complete argument. Okay, is anyone getting this to work out? Maybe I'll switch it to the my board, and then we can try to write up how a proof would go. So, right, so the goal, of course, show that for all epsilon, there exists n. For all k bigger than n, we have so we have this limit. So we have that the integral over e of f minus f k is less than epsilon, but typically we'll have several, so let's just, I don't know, put some constant there, say 5 epsilon or whatever. All right, so that's the kind of thing we're trying to do. All right, and did these two ideas, did anyone see whether combining this idea of choosing this E prime here together with Egorov was sufficient? Okay, all right, I'll give you another minute then. Okay, very good. Great. All right. Okay, so do you want to sort of dictate how you would approach writing this up?
Sure. Right. So I used splitting it up into countably many chunks of finite measure.
Okay.
And so to okay. do that, mm-hmm. we use Egorov's theorem. We'll call the chunks En. They mm-hmm. all have finite measure. And we fix an epsilon greater than zero, and we use Egorov's theorem on En.
Okay.
And so, specifically, what we want to do is there, okay, so we have this set Fn, which is a subset of En, such that the measure of En minus Fn is less than epsilon over 2 to the n. And so we do that so that the whole extra chunk has small measure.
Mm-hmm.
And then we want to choose... Wait, hold on. This might not work. I was going to use sort of the L1 continuity to
okay.
say that the integral over a set of small measure is sufficiently small, but I don't know if that works. It feels like there might be circular reasoning.
Okay.
So I'm not confident anymore.
Okay. Okay. All right. So maybe we can list what lemmas we can use. So for instance, okay, maybe I'll put it over here. So what do you know? We have, so this is one way to do it, just put it up into pieces. If we were going to try to use this other one here, where we choose an E with a small measure, I guess we already wrote it. We know that we can do that, right? So we know that we can choose an E with finite measure, which gives us most of our mass, at least. So there we get to choose, as opposed to saying that whenever we look at a small set, it has a small mass. That we might not be able to do. Okay, did anyone else have thoughts about this one? Okay, let's see. Maybe we can try to just talk through how an argument might look as opposed to trying to write up the full thing from the start. So, right, so we have our functions fk, and we have our function f that it's converging to, and we've chosen a box e prime sub epsilon, say, so that the measure outside of it of F is less than epsilon. Okay. So can we argue that the measure of Fk is also small outside of there? Let's see. Is the basic idea of how we might approach this clear enough that it would make sense to leave this and come back to it tomorrow after people have had a chance to think it through and try to write it up? And move on to another problem now. Okay. All right, so let's do that. So, okay. And I will come back to this one tomorrow. And if people are interested in looking at it tomorrow, we can. Otherwise, we can move on then also. So, right. So let me just then go back to the listing that I had and continue on to the next problem. Okay, so let's see, so here's another one. Okay, and let me know when you have thoughts on this one. Okay, as usual, if you want to see a proof, it's often helpful to think of simplified versions that you might be able to show and see if that helps. Okay, yeah, how about one more minute, and then we can just see what thoughts collect, what people are thinking about this one. Okay, let's see. So did anyone have any ideas here or ideas at least for simplified versions? Okay, let this work. So first of all, I mean, if we didn't have derivatives, then what would this be? Yeah, then this is a Weierstrass. Okay, let's see. What about if we just want the derivative of our polynomial to approach the derivative of our function? Can we do that? Yeah, we just use it. We can use a Weierstrass again, right? And then we get that. All right, now what if we want to do both of them at once? Yeah, exactly. It's integrating is smoothing, right? And differentiation is not. So if we can do the derivatives first, then the integration part is going to help us not hurt, right? So. So both get Pn prime converging to F prime uniformly by Weierstrass, and then integrate. Yeah, so then we have Pn, and we want this to approach f. And when we integrate, I guess we'll want to choose our constant to be the best possible. Right, so there's some new constant term. Right, and we get to choose what it is and still get the derivatives to converge uniformly. And if we choose those correctly, then we should still get this one. Okay, and so any ideas how to make this work in general now? And so, by the way, a good constant term would be something like f of 0, right? Yeah, that's a very good idea. So try diagonalizing. Right, so for each k, I choose pnk with for all r less than or equal to k, pnkr converges to fr and diagonalize. Yeah, that seems likely. And so then the only thing I have to make sure that this choice of the constant term is going to work here, so that we can do our smoothing as we integrate. Right. Okay. Does that make sense? People want to see more about that, or is it fairly clear how you could turn that into an argument? Okay. Let's see. Yeah, that's a very good point. So note, say they may not converge uniformly. In fact, yeah, that's a very good point. Once you know that example, just because it's useful, right? So does anyone know a function which is which has this property. Its Taylor series is zero, but it's not zero. Well, I'll just say it exists, but it's nice to have some, but there exist smooth functions. Oops. Yeah, that's right, something like that. So smooth functions with zero Taylor series, which are non-zero. Yeah, so you can build complicated ones like that, right? But you can also build really trivial ones. Yeah, right. Anything, for example, if I want to build a Taylor series here, if it's just zero an entire neighborhood of there and then does something over here, there's just no way the Taylor series can see this bump over here at all. Now, of course, you can be more careful and make it so that it's doesn't vanish in any neighborhood also, which are the examples you're giving here. But it's just clear that a Taylor series over here just can't possibly see something over here if it's zero in that neighborhood, right? So they don't converge uniformly. Or even point-wise. Okay, any other thoughts or comments about this problem? Okay, so let's try another one. And yeah, if anyone has a guess as to the answer, feel free to indicate what it is. So this is a yes-no question. Exactly, yeah. So this is another example of exactly what we just worked out that we were just talking about a second ago. Okay, so does that make sense to everyone? So the idea, as you suggested, we can take F to be a Fourier transform of something like the function that we just mentioned. So e to the minus 1 over x squared. So this is a smooth or any smooth function, any Schwarz function with Taylor series at 0 being 0. Okay, so is it clear why is that the right answer? So let's see. So if I use a Fourier transform, what is this equivalent to? Right, yeah, we can be quite explicit if you want to. Right? Okay, but I guess you already did it, but does everyone see what this transforms into when we apply the Fourier transform? Yeah, right. So when we apply the Fourier transform to this product tree, that's going to give us depending on normalization, but it's going to give us a derivative times some constant, right? So it's going to be the nth derivative. Okay, and so that's what happens to this inside the integrand when we take the Fourier transform. And so then the integral is just going to be the evaluation at 0. Right? So that's what integrating against 1 is. Right? Does that make sense? Should I say something else about that, or is that clear? Oh, sorry, it's also false. I forgot my hat. Okay. Any other thoughts or comments about this one? Okay. All right. So then let's look at another. Oh, did we already look at this one? Ah, okay. Sorry. Got it. Into two. Okay. Let's see. Okay, well, let's start at the bottom. Let's try this one next then. Okay. All right. Okay, sounds like someone's got it. So let's just try that. So okay, so you're gonna rewrite the right hand side. Let's see. So I guess if we just write out what it is by definition. It's just AB minus BA. Applied to F comma F, okay? And so then you're going to rewrite that as the imaginary part let's see. So F, yes. Okay. All right, and use Gucci shorts. Okay, so I want to just try that for a minute or so, make sure that it all works for them, and then write it out. Okay, so maybe I'll just write it down. So so as you suggest, we can use our self-adjointness to rewrite this. So that gives us some BF AF from the first term, and then AF BF from the second one. All right, and as you point out, since they're skew, when you take the and you switch the order, you take the complex conjugate. So this is 1/2 of BFAF minus the complex conjugate. Okay, and so that's the imaginary part. Yeah, we can also see the triangle inequality. Okay, let me just finish this, and then we'll write out the way that you wrote it. So this is BFAF, right? And so then this is so this should then be less than or equal to the size of BFAF. Which is less than or equal to the norm of BF times the norm of AF, right? Okay, and see, and you also had a way to do it in terms of the triangle inequality, so how did that one work out?
It's basically the same, but except for like the step where you change it into the conjugate, you just break it into the absolute value of the first inner product plus the absolute value of the second inner product.
Okay, I see. So here instead you could put this is equal to, I guess, actually less than, right? To the absolute value of the first. Like that, so that jumps us down to here. Right. Okay, other thoughts or comments about this one? Okay, so let's try another. Oh, sorry, did I not finish the problem? Oh yeah, sorry, yeah, there is, yep. Next, okay, sorry, didn't finish. So so it says equality. Then we get the equality to work out also. Yeah, so the, see, so our, and this is the left-hand side over here. And so there were two inequalities in my, right up here, these two. And so we need to, check those. Okay. So this one is, okay, sorry. So you're doing it this order. So let me call this one number two, number one. So two, you were saying for Cauchy-Schwarz, you need AF equals a constant times BF. All right, so this is Cauchy-Schwarz here. If and only if AF is equal to some constant times BF, as you wrote, right? Okay, and for one, if AF equals some constant times BF, then we get equality. If and only if, and as you said, so this is a complex. Aren't we off by a parity here? Right. So this is if and only if C is pure imaginary. Okay. Okay, any other thoughts or comments about this one? Yeah, you're right, there's an extra part there. Skip that. Okay, so try another. I believe that's correct. That seems, yeah. So let's see here. It is a little bit vague, but I believe that is what they mean. Weakly, this would be presumably the weak operator topology. Let me check. So, by the way, is there another topology that it could mean? Yeah, right. Right. Yeah, so that's that's the statement of the problem, right? At least one interpretation, this green interpretation, right? Is it which I think is probably the right one, that this is strong operator. Okay, very good. Yeah. So yeah, why don't we list what some of these topologies are? Yeah. So you want to tell us so topologies. Okay. So we have the weak operator topology. Yeah, okay, let's just list what we have. So there's a weak operator topology, the weak topology, on the Banach space of, as a Banach space. There's a strong operator topology. Okay, are there any other topologies that come up here? Okay, well, let me list one more. So there's also a norm topology. As a Banach space. Okay, so here's several topologies. Okay, let's see, does anyone want to volunteer what any of those are? Okay, so let's just try some of these. So the weak operator topology is the first one that we were mentioning here. So this is the one so that the weak things in the Hilbert space are continuous. So it's the weakest topology in which t goes to so for every x and y in H we have T goes to the TXY is continuous. Okay, and so two, this would be a weak topologist in the general sense. So this is the weakest topology in which for every element of the dual space, we have the map from the BH to the R given by just taking it to a phi of T is continuous. Okay, so there's some extra things that are not given by pairings. Okay, and so three is pointwise. Convergent, that is to say for all the points, so the points are x in h, we have that, pointwise convergent. So Tn converges strongly to T if, I left that out. For all H, we have Tn X converges strongly to Tx. So this is happening in H. And then norm topology for Tn converges to T if the operator norm of Tn minus T converges to zero. So these are various topologies that we have on the bounded functions on any Hilbert space. Okay, so any thoughts now about how to deal with this? Okay. So there's a suggestion here, so that the norm of an minus a applied to some X, right? Because we're interested not in the operator norm, but in the strong operator topology. So we're going to, as suggested, apply it to X. Right, and so then this is, so we just, let's see. So you wrote it out in a nice way. So this is going to be the norm of AN X plus the norm of AX minus the inner product of AN X with X. Right. And AX with ANX. Okay, and this goes to zero. Okay, and that's the end. Is that following immediately from our conditions here? Okay, right, so since each term converges to AX. Okay, so one of those were given right here. And so then the other two should follow from the from the weak. Okay, any other comments or questions about this one? Okay, let's see, we just have 2 minutes left. So I'd like to stop, but I still think it's a good idea to try writing one up. Anyone want to volunteer any of the problems that we've seen today or even before that they'd be interested in trying to write up tonight, and then we can have a chance to look it over tomorrow. If we come up with one, then more than one person can try it on the same problem. I think that would be helpful. No suggestions. Okay, then the one that I would guess I would recommend is the Egoroff problem that we were looking at in some detail earlier here. This one here. So, string 14 number 3. So this is, I think it's a good exercise to try to write this one up in some detail because there are some kind of technicalities which make it one where it's fairly easy to convince yourself that something's going to work but be missing some details. So let me recommend that people try to write up this spring 2014 number 3 problem, and we'll go over what people found tomorrow. Also, once again, if anyone has thought of any particular topic that you feel we haven't talked about enough and it looks like you're seeing on the exams, tell me now or email me. Otherwise, I'll just come up with a variety of problems starting tomorrow. Okay. All right, very good. Time is up, and I guess I will see you tomorrow.